You worry. Kim survived the first location. She sounded sharp at the end. But this is the second murder, and she said the date was November 9th, 1888, the day of the last killing. If she's really moving forward through the crime scenes, then something is pulling her deeper. What could it be? And she already hinted at something worse. Why did he stop? Or did he? And mostly, why haven't you heard from her in days?
Hi, I'm here. Hanbury Street, number 29. I spent yesterday walking around getting to know Whitechapel. It's not great. The bricks are dark. There's a passageway beside the house that leads into the yard. That yard.
You tell Kim to breathe and tell you what she sees.
It's morning again, but not the same morning. The backyard is small. They are everywhere. Even 2 months later, that is not comforting. This is where Annie Chapman was found. If I remember correctly, it was September 8, 1888. Her name wasn't Annie Chapman at birth. It was Annie Eliza Smith, born September 1841. 47 when she died. She was 5 feet tall. She had blue eyes, dark wavy hair, and she had good teeth. That detail appears repeatedly in testimonies. Almost lovingly noted. Why do I always describe the teeth?
You mentions it's because it humanizes them.
Right. She had been married to John Chapman, a coachman. They had 3 children. One died young, one was disabled and sent away, one surviving daughter. They separated. He paid her 10 shillings a week until he died. After that, she declined. Chronic lung disease, possibly tuberculosis, maybe syphilis. She was malnourished. Multiple witnesses described her as sober, not a raging drunk.
She's reciting Annie's life like grocery items. When did that become normal?
You from the press?
No.
Then you shouldn't be here.
I'm paying my respects.
Women like her shouldn't be remembered.
I found a picture of her from 69. I'm sending it to Secret Hall. If this works the way I think it does, it should exist in 2026. Do me a favor and check. Did it work?
You confirm it did. You also tell her that Mr. Sturcis is becoming cautious, and you ask Kim what to do.
Don't worry about it. Where was I? Right. She was last seen alive around 5:30 in the morning. A woman named Elizabeth Long saw her speaking to a man here, against the shutters. Long heard him say, "Will you?" And Annie replied, "Yes." It was a short exchange. No struggle was reported. A few minutes later, another man, Albert Kadosh, heard a woman say, "No," from the yard. Then something hit the fence. At 6 a.m., her body was discovered.
You mention it's terribly sad and ask how she was found.
You don't want to know. It was horrible. I will spare you the details, but it was like the others. What is interesting, though, is that she had old bruises, too. She had been struck before.
You ask if it was before that night.
Yes. There had been a fight days earlier in a lodging house with another woman, Eliza Cooper. They don't know exactly what the reason was. Some say it involved a man, others mention soap, money, and jealousy. No one agrees, but she had a black eye before she died. That bruise on her temple does not belong to the killer. Now, the mutilation. My apologies, but it's essential for you to know. Try to turn off your emotions for this one and look at it from a research perspective, if you can. The abdomen was entirely laid open. The intestines were removed and placed over her shoulder. The uterus, upper portion of her genitals, 2/3 of the bladder, all removed. He removed her motherhood. But why? The doctors testified it showed anatomical knowledge. He said the knife must have been at least 6 to 8 inches long. Thin blade, very sharp. He also said something else. He believed the throat was cut first, and that she likely entered the yard alive. No sign of struggle.
You ask if she might have trusted him.
She needed money for a bed. That's it. How horribly sad. This one disturbed me more than Nichols, because it's contained. Residents asleep above, and still, no one clearly sees him. No one clearly hears her. She was so close to people, yet so lonely. The doctor estimated that she had been dead at least 2 hours when examined at 6:30 a.m. But it was a cool morning. Loss of blood accelerates cooling. Time of death is uncertain.
You mentioned that Kim sounds unsettled.
Because this is the second murder and the mutilation escalated dramatically, and yet there's still no confirmed sexual act. No evidence of intercourse, no evidence that she was assaulted sexually before death. The removal of organs, but no obvious sexual violation in the confidential sense. Why remove the uterus? Why place the intestines deliberately over the shoulder? Why not flee immediately? He worked here for minutes in an enclosed yard with people inside the house. That suggests either confidence or routine.
They say she was a street woman.
They say that about all of them.
She had family.
So do we.
They're already being labeled the same thing, street women. But Annie didn't enter prostitution until after her husband died. And even then, accounts differ. Some say she sold flowers, some say she occasionally sought money that way. This location gives me an idea. We need to know more about identity. Were these women targeted because they were prostitutes, or were they called prostitutes because they were murdered in Whitechapel? And another question keeps bothering me. If this was the second of five, why does it already feel deliberate? Why remove the uterus? If I understand that choice, I understand him. And if I understand him...
You ask what Kim needs from you.
We have two directions here. If we follow Annie's life directly, we examine what it's truly meant to be labeled a prostitute in Whitechapel, whether the label itself shaped the case. Or we widen the lens, the streets, the poverty, the alcohol, the overcrowding, the atmosphere of 1888 London that may have created opportunity. Both paths influence how we interpret motive. Both change the theory. Hey, tell me where we go next. Quickly now.